Good morning and welcome to our session. This is the late-breaking developments in public health session, and our focus today is racism in public health. But before we present our distinguished group of speakers, I'd like to spend a few minutes, and very few, setting a more global and universal context for our concern with this topic. Lest you adopt an attitude that is complacent, self-exculpatory, or dismissive, recognize that racism is only one of the ills that cluster under a much larger umbrella, one that besets each of us. For racism is a fairly modern concept in the scheme of things. The older and more encompassing problem that we all share without a radical self-critique is ethnocentrism. Ethnocentrism may be loosely defined as an inclusive term that embodies the idea of a personal or collective sense of superiority based on ethnicity, race, tribe, caste, or nationality. From the Greek root ethnos, a people or group, ethnocentrism refers to the belief that one's own culture is better than that of others. Thus, one's worldview is centered in his or her own way of life. Ethnocentrism, to the extent that it posits a particular culture as normative, creates outsiders, those who differ. Because the standard culture, and I say standard in quotes, is perceived as natural, beautiful, right, and important, those cultures that differ are viewed conversely as inhuman, irrational, unnatural, and simply wrong. Ethnocentrism is a prevailing part of the human condition. It is learned through socialization, and it persists because it fulfills important psychological needs for power and a sense of belonging. Ethnocentrism is the basis for the way people feel about themselves in contrast to others, and everyone is ethnocentric, regardless of how open-minded they claim to be. Ethnocentrism started with the ancient Greeks, who around the 5th century BCE began to use the term Hellenes to denote all Greek-speaking peoples. The Greek historian Herodotus was the first to define Greeks as a whole, based on shared blood, language, religious practices, and way of life. The Greeks created the concept of barbarian as the other, a pejorative term from the Greek barbar, which was the sound a dog makes, like the English bow wow. To the Greeks, the speech of barbarians, those who did not speak the Greek language, sounded like the barking of dogs. Barbarians spoke gibberish. Thus, the practice of looking down on the other, those that are different, has been handed down to us. Some of ethnocentrism's modern manifestations include the tribalism in Africa that led to the genocide in Rwanda in the 1970s, the nationalism in Europe that has produced two world wars and ongoing conflict, the caste system that condemns people to low status to a marginal existence in India, and the racism in the United States that we will discuss today. The public health implications are endless. I hope I've stepped on some of your toes. I want your attention and self-critique, your self-examination on how you define yourselves and the other as we converse today. Our first speaker,
Our first speaker is Cheryl Easley, speaking on the topic of racism and human rights. Cheryl is co-owner and a consultant with Twin Solutions Consulting, LLC, based in Huntsville, Alabama. She's former dean of the College of Health and Social Welfare at the University of Alaska Anchorage and a past president of the American Public Health Association. Cheryl's also has been a member of the International Human Rights Committee of APHA and a co-author of its statement of principles of human rights. Before I ask Cheryl to begin her talk, would you raise your hand if you have an empty seat next to you? Does anyone have it? So keep your hands up if you have an empty seat next to you. Please come down from the back and take these seats, because it's only going to get more crowded in the back. So if you have an empty seat, just keep your hand up for a moment so people can find. Okay. We have another empty seat right up here in front. And there's plenty of room on the for in the absence of enough seats, there's room on the floor here. If the people in the back would like to come down and sit on the floor, that's up to you, obviously. Are there any other empty seats? Hands up, any empty seats? Okay. Cheryl, Pat Beasley. You're all queued up here. So.
Okay. Good morning. Okay, I have no relationships to disclose. I'd like to start out talking about human rights, then to shift over and talk about racism and embed within that some other ideas from human rights principles. What are human rights? Human rights are the rights that we are born with. They are ours by virtue of the fact that we are human beings, regardless of any status or circumstance. Universal human rights are guaranteed and expressed in law in international treaties, covenants, conventions, and principles and other sources of international law. They are universal and inalienable. That means they cover everyone and they should not be divided from us. They are interdependent and indivisible, which means that when you deny a person the enjoyment of any human right, you are also impairing their ability to enjoy other human rights, and that's an important thing to remember. They are equal and non-discriminatory. And they are both rights and obligations. Rights language always sets up a claim situation where one party has a claim on another. In human rights, it is a situation where the individual person has a claim upon the nation state. And those obligations of the state are an obligation to respect rights, which means states must refrain from interfering or curtailing the enjoyment of rights, an obligation to protect rights, which means they must take positive action to facilitate the enjoyment of rights, and the obligation to fulfill, which means that states must take the obligation to protect, which means they must take positive action to facilitate the enjoyment of rights. I think I did that wrong. But at any rate, on the individual level, it also means that we have to respect the human rights of others. Basic human rights documents, and these grew out of the time following the Second World War when the United Nations was established. And the relationship of human rights to racism is extremely close. The enunciation of those rights grew to a large extent out of the horrendous violations of human rights that were perpetrated during the Second World War and especially during the Holocaust. The basic document of human rights, the basic one, and I always have to ask this question, how many of you have read the Universal Declarations of Human Rights? Oh, it's getting better. I always have to ask that question. The basic document of our rights. And from that derived two international covenants, the Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights. And those three documents, with some additional protocols to the ICESCR, form what is called the International Bill of Human Rights. The International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights is important because that's where the first place where the right to health is enunciated. We have not, as a country, ratified this covenant. Also, the Constitution of the World Health Organization, the Declaration of Alma-Ata, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. Important ideas from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that have to do with racism. Human rights are founded in the belief of the inherent dignity, equal and inalienable rights of the human person and the worth of the human person. We are all born equal and free in dignity and rights, and we should act toward each other in the spirit of brotherhood. We have the right to life, liberty, and many other rights are enunciated here. We begin to talk a little bit about the right to health here because we talk about the right to a standard of living adequate to health and well-being and social security in the event of old age or misfortune. The Constitution of the World Health Organization is the first place where we begin to talk about the enjoyment of the highest attainable standard of health as one of the fundamental human rights of every human being without distinction. The Declaration of Alma-Ata goes on to expand that and talk about health as an important worldwide social goal whose realization requires the action of many other social and economic sectors in addition to the health sector. The right to health. Although this was not included in the earliest modern enunciation of human rights, and the early statements were the statement of the French statement on rights of man and the American Declaration of Independence. Didn't talk about health at first, but it was added later to the French in the French Constituent Assembly in 1791. In British laws, then in Mexico, they recognized the state's right in public health. Chile in 1925 became the first nation to incorporate the right to health. Now more than 100 countries have commitment to the right to health or the right to health care in their constitutions. In the United States, although 72% of Americans in 2010 strongly believe that health care should be a human right, it remains ambiguous. We do not have amendments in our Constitution that talk about the right to health, and when those have been proposed, they've gotten very little support. We lack a right to health statute, although some states have or are trying to incorporate these. We have yet to, as I said, to ratify the Covenant on Social, Economic, and Cultural Rights. The CRC is the Convention on Rights of the Child. CEDAW, of course, is Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, and we oppose the creation of a special rapporteur for the right to health. That means a person to investigate whether or not we are actually fulfilling the rights we have agreed to. Okay, racism. Prejudice is a great time saver. You can form opinions without having to get the facts. Okay, so prejudice is a prejudgment in favor or against a person, group, event, or whatever. An action based on prejudice is discrimination. A negative prejudgment is a stereotype. And action based on that is bigotry. Power is an important part of this because all these things without power do not create racism. Racism is race, prejudice, plus power. Okay, the Declaration on Race and Race Prejudice, which was another UNESCO document, describes then the definition that the United Nations gives to prejudice. Racist ideologies, prejudice attitudes, discriminatory behavior, structural arrangements, and institutionalized practices resulting in racial inequality, as well as the fallacious notion that discriminatory relations between groups are morally and scientifically justified. And it's reflected in discriminatory provisions in legislation or regulations, discriminatory practices. It hinders the development of the victims. It perverts those who practice it. It divides nations internally, impedes international cooperation, gives rise to political tensions, contrary to the fundamental principles of international law, and consequently disturbs international peace and security. This is how it's defined. Okay. This man is Josiah Wedgwood. I'm sure the women in here probably recognize the name Wedgwood. He was he's an exquisite potter. He's also a prominent abolitionist, and he designed the Am I Not a Man and a Brother anti-slavery medallion. And here's the medallion, and it was the medallion of the Anti-Slavery Society of Britain. The two questions embodied here are the questions, to me, that are the foundation of racism, because it questions the humanity of a person and whether or not he is like you. And to the extent that we begin to, define others as either unhuman or subhuman and or essentially different from us, we then find ourselves morally capable of dispossessing them, colonizing them, oppressing them, exploiting them, harming them, maiming them, torturing them, and eventually destroying them. Some other isms akin to racism. Carol talked about some of these. I won't spend time. But to say that xenophobia, nativism, and nationalism are the foundations of our discrimination against immigrants, and we need to bear that in mind. The vocabulary of racism. These horrible words, some of them. Eugenics, xenophobia, genocide, apartheid. Race is a child of racism, not the father. Race was defined in order to create essentially an excuse for us to be able to exploit others economically and socially. The origins of modern racism started racism and anti-Semitism in the 18th and 19th centuries. Jews had gained rights and slavery had been abolished in some of the British and French colonies. Then the opponents of rights began to look for ways in which to develop some kind of science or pseudoscience to justify their racism. And the science of race then can be traced back to these ideas to classify peoples of the world. two ideas came together, the argument that history has seen the development of peoples toward civilizations and whites were the most advanced of the lot, and the idea that permanent inherited characteristics divided people by race. 18th century thinkers assumed that all peoples would eventually achieve civilization, but in the 19th century, racial theorists believed that only certain races could do so because of their inherent biological qualities. And from that descends the philosophies that justified Nazism. Americans believe in the reality of race as a defined, indubitable feature of the natural world. Racism, the need to ascribe bone-deep features to people and then humiliate, reduce, and destroy them, inevitably follows from this inalterable condition. In this way, racism is rendered as the innocent daughter of Mother Nature, and one is left to deplore the Middle Passage or the Trail of Tears, the way one deplores an earthquake or a tornado or any other phenomena that can best be cast as beyond the handiwork of men. Okay, the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racism says that the existence of racial barriers is repugnant to the ideas of any society, and that among the rights to be enjoyed without distinction of race is the right to health. The Declaration of Race and Race Prejudice says that we all belong to a single stock. One of the ideas of the pseudoscientific racist theories is that people are essentially there are different species of human beings, and the claim that any race is superior is contrary to moral and ethical laws. The Durban Declaration again reiterates ideas from the Universal Declaration and says any doctrine of racial superiority is scientifically false, morally contemptible, socially unjust, and dangerous, and must be rejected along with theories which attempt to determine the existence of separate human races. It means human species. When we talk about derogation, it means that in certain instances human rights can be abrogated because of emergency circumstances. But there is no derogation from racial discrimination, genocide, the crime of apartheid, slavery, ever. There's no excuse for derogation from these rights. I'll just skip past some of the documents that we've just now talked about. The impact of racism on human rights. In the 1940s, there was a series of radio shows that came on in Baltimore. They were sponsored by Johns Hopkins, and they were these fictitious conversations between leaders. Now, one of these was the conversation between Booker T. Washington and Welch, who was then the dean of the School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins. And what he's essentially supposed to be saying here is that health is never a question of race. We're all, kind of in this together. It's no respecter of person. It denies the ideas of social determinants of health. Federal government has responded to virtually every major domestic security crisis in this nation with forms of ethnic and racial profiling. And so we've gone beyond driving while black to driving, flying, worshiping, shopping, or staying at home while black, brown, red, yellow, Muslim, or of Middle Eastern appearance. Black pedestrians trying to cross the street. Well, they found the University of Arizona took them 32% longer to get across the street. And it was, defined as subconscious biases of the drivers. When we talk about the impacts of racism on health, it's mediated through this idea of allostatic load, which are certain types of body changes that result from chronic exposure to racism, disrespect, and humiliation. And so we have then this idea of vigilance. This study done by Sawyer in the American Journal of Public Health looks at the experience of a group of Latino young women who begin to develop the physiological changes before the racism even occurred. The threat of it was enough. We have all these symptoms that result to children from the impact of social and racial inequality. Stereotypic type threat is an idea that came from education that says people are worried about being, casting their race or their group in a bad light, and so they begin to monitor and also experience all kinds of negative things, including avoidance, which impairs their right, their ability to learn, and also in health situations, causes allostatic load types of problems, and also probably interferes with their ability to cooperate with medical treatment. Racist experimentation, I won't talk a lot about this. A book, Medical Apartheid, if you're interested in reading, I would greatly recommend that. There are racial disparities. The other flip side of what happens with research is racial disparities in grant awards. And so we find that of all groups, black or African American scientists were much less likely to receive funding when they applied for NIH grants. Republicans deny healthcare to me, and here's a denial of the Medicaid expansion provisions of the ACA, which disproportionately has impacted blacks and I should say Latino patients. Felon disenfranchisement is a good example of the intersection of human rights and race and health, because felon disenfranchisement is a denial of political participation rights, which leads to the fact that these people are then unable to influence public policy and also probably develop allostatic load problems from feeling like they are second-class citizens because they're excluded from participating in the society. Racism is a killer, and whether death comes quickly at the end of a road that you would rather not have taken, or it comes daily with the drip, drip, drip of microaggressions, disrespect, humiliation. In the end, the ultimate outworking of racism is that someone dies. Resolutions. We need to talk. We need first to think about our own selves. Carol talked about that. We need to think about how we talk with others. What's going on in our professional groups? Are we looking at the racial implications of legislation and policies? Are we sensitive to the situation of subgroups who are vulnerable? These two professional statements on racism are especially good from the American Nurses Association and the National Association of Social Workers if your professional group has not developed a statement. Finally, in conclusion, racism constitutes a global assault to basic human rights and fundamental freedoms, civic and political, economic, social, and cultural, including the right to the highest attainable standard of health. Racial discrimination in its most extreme forms, genocide and apartheid, is a crime against humanity. The impacts of racism across the lifespan from pre-birth to age are cumulative and in addition have generational effects. Racism impairs life chances, living conditions, access to resources, education, social opportunities, and access to quality health care. Unfair treatment leads to psychic distress, decreased mental and physical health, unhealthy coping strategies and risk behaviors, and the internalization of narrative stereotypes. Thank you.